Hey y'all, welcome to this episode of Foamcast. I'm Lauren Westover. Today we're going to talk about pulmonary embolism, specifically the teeny tiny PEs, the subsegmental PEs. These are peripheral clots that are sort of unknown clinical significance at this point. What we know is that the incidence of subsegmental PEs has been increasing. They're much more common than they used to be. And part of this is because the use of CTPA for PE has increased, and with that has come an increase in the number of PEs diagnosed. However, what we haven't diagnosed increasingly are central or fatal PEs. So we've been picking up more of these teeny tiny clots. And this is even more common in the higher resolution CT scanners, the multiple detector CTs, or like the 16 and 64 slice CT scans. A systematic review and meta-analysis found that an increasing proportion of subsegmental PEs diagnosed in multi-detector CTs, 9.4%, compared with single detector CTs, 4.6%. And this was even higher in the 64 slice detectors. It was 15% compared with the, say, the 4 or 16 slice CTs, which was 7.1 or 6.9%. So about 7% compared with almost double that for the 64 slice CT scanner. And this looks on the surface like a good thing, right? Like, why would we want to miss a pulmonary embolism? We're taught in med school going forward that PE is this can't miss diagnosis. But there's this problem here, and it's that the inter-rater reliability of PE on CT is not perfect. We call the CT scanner the donut of truth, jokingly, in emergency medicine. But the problem is it really may not be. And the inter-rater reliability, specifically of peripheral PEs, it's not that great. So what they've done with studies is they've looked at when CTPAs are read by two blinded radiologists, so they don't know each other's read. False positive scan, so finding a PE when one really isn't there, happens in about 5 to 25% of CT scans. There was this 2015 study by Hutchinson et al., which found 25.9% of CT scans positive for PE were actually false positive scans. And a lot of people were like, well, this study, maybe it's an outlier. They were specialized chest radiologists. But when you look at the studies, the numbers are consistently not 0% and often in that 5 to 25% range. And we also know that false positive scans are more common when you're looking at isolated and small or peripheral PEs, so specifically in subsegmental PEs. And because of this, some guidelines say it's actually okay to not anticoagulate some of these patients, specifically the American College of Chest Physicians 2016 guidelines and the American College of Emergency Physicians 2018 guidelines. They say, okay, you can withhold anticoagulation in some patients with subsegmental PE that do not have a DVT. So you have to assess in these patients, do you have a DVT? And then you have to look at risk factors. So if you have risk factors for VTE, whether it's active malignancy or some other, say, provoking cause or factor V Leiden or something like that, then that's not the patient that you're going to withhold anticoagulation from. But they say, if you don't have a DVT, you don't have any of those risk factors, what you can do is just do surveillance for these patients and then ascertain whether or not you need to start anticoagulation. And you may just say, well, okay, why not just start anticoagulation? And it's because that's not benign. We know that people fall, they slice their fingers, accidents happen, and things like head bleeds then happen. And those things can be devastating to minor depending on the severity. But now we really have the first prospective study on what happens when you manage patients with subsegmental PE without anticoagulation. And this is a prospective study. It's not a randomized trial at 18 centers, mostly in Canada, but also in Switzerland and a couple in France. And what they looked at was patients who were diagnosed in the emergency department with one or more isolated subsegmental PEs and no proximal DVT. So you couldn't have a DVT that was from the popliteal trifurcation or more proximal on ultrasound. So everyone got a CTA that showed subsegmental PEs and they all got an ultrasound, and you could have a distal DVT but not a proximal DVT. And the average age was about 56, about half were female, and you couldn't have things like active malignancy, a history of VTE, you couldn't need oxygen, could be pregnant or have some other reason to be on long-term anticoagulation or hospitalized or something like that. And what they did in these cases was they did a DVT ultrasound on all of these patients. So they got their second DVT ultrasound about a week later, so 5 to 7 days later. And at that point, if you still did not have a proximal DVT, so you didn't have anything from the popliteal trafication more proximally, then in those cases, you weren't started on anticoagulation. If you did, then you were started on anticoagulation. And what they wanted to know was who had recurrent venous thromboembolism within 90 days. And what they found in this case is they ended up recruiting 292 patients who had isolated subsegmental PE. Of those, 20 had a proximal DVT on that initial or repeat ultrasound. And so they ended up total analyzing 266 patients with subsegmental PE and no DVT. And 8 of those had recurrent VTE by 90 days. So that's 3.1%, 95% confidence interval, 1.6 to 6.1%. And of those, 4 had a PE, extension of PE, that's 1.4%. And 4 had proximal DVTs at that time, so 1.5%. And they looked at that a couple different ways. They looked at just what if you had just one teeny tiny subsegmental PE. That was most of the patients. It was 209 of the 266. There they found 2.1% had recurrent VTE within 90 days, 95% confidence interval, 0.8 to 5.5%. And multiple subsegmental PEs, higher proportion had recurrent VTE, 5.7%, 95% confidence interval, 2.2 to 14.4%. So more recurrent VTE, the more number of subsegmental PEs you have. That makes sense. They also looked at what happens with regards to age in the just single subsegmental PE group. And so they divided this, they dichotomized it at 65 and younger to over 65. And the incidence was less in those that were younger. It was 1.8%, 95% confidence interval, 0.6 to 5.4%, compared with 5.6% in the age greater than 65 group. So the results of this study, we can see that some patients with subsegmental PE who are not anticoagulated will go on to have progression of the PE or a DVT within 90 days. The absolute percent is pretty small. It's like 1.4% will go on to have a PE, 1.5% a DVT. However, with this study, they felt that the upper bound of the 95% confidence interval really shouldn't cross 3% for safety type of reasons. And in sort of all these analyses, that 95% confidence interval does in fact cross 3. When you get to the subgroup analyses, it sort of makes sense because there are very few events and patients. So the uncertainty around those estimates is pretty broad, which means the 95% confidence interval is pretty broad as well. So the point estimate could be pretty low. Now, it's my guess that this study is going to really move the needle towards anticoagulation of patients with subsegmental PE. I think that we'll probably see guidelines updated to suggest that. However, I'm not sure that this is the end of the story. I think that this is a really well done study, but I think that there are limitations here that we need to discuss. And the first is that this study was largely performed in Canada and some sites in Europe. Now, what's the difference between performing this study in Canada and Europe versus in the United States? And that is the kinds of patients we evaluate for pulmonary embolism. In the United States, we have a super low threshold for sending patients to the CT scanner for possible PE. In Canada and Europe, that bar is a little bit higher. And we can sort of assess this by looking at the CTPA yield. So the number of CTPAs that are positive for pulmonary embolism divided by all those that we order. Now, you might think about your own personal yield. How many CTAs that you order for PE are actually positive? When you look at those numbers in the United States, there was a paper by Klein et al. In 2020 that showed that it was 2% at some institutions. And this number can go higher in the United States. There was a paper by Venkatesh et al. That looked at Medicare beneficiaries, so maybe a higher risk population because it's an older group, that found that that number may go up a bit. It was 6%. Other studies in the United States, Osman et al. Found a yield of 5.4%, and Mills et al. In 2016 found a whopping 8.1% in the United States. What does it look like in other countries? Well, in the Netherlands, Ali et al. Had a 2012 abstract that found 23% yield. In Europe, Doma et al. 2010 found 20 to 29% yield of CTPA for PE. So those are huge numbers. Penaloza et al. 2013 found a 31% yield for pulmonary embolism. In Canada, it's a bit lower. Costa et al. In 2014 found a yield of 15%, which sort of echoes that of Pennett et al. In 2011 that found 16.4%, and Chung et al. In 2018, it was a research letter, found a yield of 14.3%. So the yield is probably a bit to substantially higher in Canada and Europe than it is in the United States. And this is important because that means that maybe they're more clinically significant pulmonary emboli. So they're working up or evaluating patients who either appear a little bit sicker, have more risk factors, or otherwise more at risk versus catching something that may be incidental or may not be there. So these are more likely to be true, real, or clinically significant pulmonary emboli. The other thing here has to do with that 90-day outcome. Now, in venous thromboembolism research, it's common to use a 90-day VTE, like combined DVT or PE, or separate outcome. The issue with this outcome, although it's super standard, is that what makes a patient high risk on day zero, so the day we see them in the ED, is probably still going to make them higher risk on day 15, on day 30, on day 90. So they may be more at risk of developing a PE later on in the study that really doesn't necessarily have to do with our therapy. Now, that may mean that these patients do need to be on anticoagulants because they are more likely to develop a PE at any point in time. Unfortunately, in this study, we don't have those granular details on what kinds of risk factors these patients had, what made them high risk. We know that a lot of them presented with dyspnea, with chest pain, about 14% presented with syncope. Maybe this isn't a really low risk cohort. But I think we can see that the data shows that it does appear that there's very little recurrent VTE at 90 days in those 65 years and younger. So there may still be a group that withholding anticoagulation might be reasonable in favor of surveillance. So my bottom line to this study is that I think that this is really going to move us towards anticoagulating these patients, which really is no change in practice because I think that almost everyone in the United States is anticoagulating these patients, although we kind of all recognize that there really may not be a significant benefit. But I think this study shows that there is a benefit in a certain group of patients. It still remains unknown whether that benefit really translates to the US practice pattern setting. We still don't know if maybe there's a group that we can safely withhold anticoagulation from in that group. So that wraps it up for this episode of Foamcast. References will be on the website at foamcast.org. Go check out the article, read it yourself, and thanks for listening, y'all. Foamcast is free, open access medical education. The opinions expressed are ours alone and nobody else's. And today, they're not even Jeremy's.